Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, January 25th, 2017. And this says, before the first cup with Jules here on UCY.TV, happy Wednesday, everyone. It is 33 degrees. And again, warming up and melting snow here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show AI, IBM, Google, Mental Health, Monitoring Tech, and Diagnosis. We looked at a lot of stuff yesterday. We looked at IBM and Google. We still got to finish that story about Google wanting to get in your brain. But Google and IBM and a lot of the other vendors have found a way to utilize your voice patterns to diagnose mental disease. And I was doing a lot of digging here last night, looking to see how long they have been utilizing this technology in experimentation. And apparently, it looks like at least back to the early 2000s, they've really been kind of looking at this bioacoustics, or whatever you want to call it, as a tool to diagnose illness. We had discussed, Sherry Edwards was a guest a couple times on UCY, JJ had her on, and Continual Condition guys from New York had her on too a few times. And she had been talking about this a long time ago. She has a piece of software that does the same thing. It can pick out personality traits and come up with different issues, tell you whether or not you have blockages or illnesses. I don't know, I had that done to myself, and it was a pretty neat report that it spit out. But now, like, we are looking at serious medical establishments that are considering this bioacoustics as a real tool in the future. And the frightening part about this is, of course, you know, privacy advocates out there will be screaming to the high heaven about this, but I was reading every one of these stories says, oh, don't worry about it. We're not looking at the content of your phone call. We are just using your voice cadences and I don't know whether or not you're getting excited to determine what kind of illness you have. But guys, they're going to be able to tell at any point in time what is ailing us just by the way we talk. Going to be impossible as they get better and better, and as you have AI beckoning all this stuff, doing all the hard thinking, finding the voice micro expressions. I just made that up, but same difference, small fluctuations that normal humans cannot even detect, but the AI is able to pick them up. And after they have seen 10 million samples of voice patterns, you know, large data set, they are able to start drawing conclusions. And that is where we are at right now. A brand new story out of MIT Technology Review. It looks like this voice thing for diagnosis is really big now. Scientific American had one the other day, and now MIT Technology Review. Voice analysis could diagnose disease, research enlists smartphones and machine learning to find vocal patterns that might signal post-traumatic stress disorder or even heart disease. And, you know, those are just two of the tokens. Beep, beep. You know, post-traumatic stress disorder is where it all started for the research for DARPA into the brain. And it's kind of spun out now. They've included Alzheimer's and dementia and depression and all these other things. And they will continue as we have this mental health add-on to the 21st Century Cures Act, where they are going to focus on healing what ails our brains. Charles Maymar has been a psychiatrist for 40 years. When a combat veteran steps into his office for an evaluation, he still can't diagnose post-traumatic stress disorder with 100% accuracy. Marmar, who is chairman of the Department of Psychiatry at New York University's Langone Medical Center, is hoping to find an answer in his speech. Voice samples are a rich source of information about a person's health, and researchers think that subtle vocal cues may indicate underlying medical conditions or gauge disease risk, and in a few years, it might actually be possible to monitor a person's health remotely, ding, 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 using smartphones and other wearables by recording short speech samples and analyzing them for disease biomarkers. Now, that's why I read this first two paragraphs to you, because this is everything we've been talking about, everything we've been postulating. Yep. It's about ready to come true. A few short years, I'm going to guess by 2020, when all hell's about to break loose. As part of a five-year study, Marmar is collecting voice samples from veterans and analyzing vocal cues like tone, pitch, rhythm, rate, and volume for signs of invisible injuries like PTSD, traumatic brain injury, and depression. I'll tell you what, now that IBM, Dr. Watson, is working over at the VA, I will guarantee you that Marmar's research is going to continue over there, as Watson is learning to diagnose disease with voice as well. Using machine learning to mine features in the voice, algorithms pick out vocal patterns in people with conditions and then compare them with voice samples of designated healthy people. So, let's see what else. I don't know. I don't want to read the whole story. So there you have it. I want to go back to Google. We had Google also working on diagnostics. Google wants to monitor your mental health, and you should welcome it into your mind. This is the story we never finished yesterday, and I really would like to, because Google DARPA, draw a line between them. They just have this rotating door. I mean, Google doesn't work for DARPA. Oh, maybe they do, but we got DARPA Dan, and we did have Regina Duggan, and now Regina Duggan's over at Facebook working in their Moonshots division. Sprinkle funding more mad science in more tech industry places. But Google has Kurzweil, and that's what's important here. Google has Tommy Incel. Google has DARPA Dan. Google also owns 7 robotics companies. I don't know if they sold any of those off, but they bought a whole bunch of them a couple of years back. And Google also has an AI that started teaching itself. And not only has it started teaching itself, but it started creating an AI, started creating its own AI. I would be frightened of that. So now Google's going to come up with this brain scan, mind scan, voice pattern scan, lie detector, totally invasive to your last bastion of freedom tools. This is scary. Dr. Incel, good old Tommy, is part of a school of thought that suggests this voice technology is even better suited to mental health. Symptoms of depression, for instance, are inconsistent, ebbing and rising without obvious patterns. So a short consultation with a doctor every few weeks means a poor diagnosis. But if you have wearable technology, which allows continuous monitoring, this small portable device might monitor the tone of your voice, your speech patterns, and your physical movements, picking up the very first sign of trouble. And this device could be your mobile phone. You know, like I said, it is going to be your smartphone. Then it'll be your Fitbit that'll be required by your health insurance company. And then who knows? Then it's going to be the nanobots in your blood. So you never have to go see a doctor. And they will deliver living therapeutics to any of your growing tumors and kill them. I was reading, there's a whole new push on those living therapeutics, this genetically modified gut bacteria that Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has invested in. We read about them months ago out of the MIT Technology Review. And there's an update to that. Maybe we'll get to that if I finally finish this brain AI crossover that I've been working on for a month. Anyway, Because simply, we now live in a world where your phone might be able to observe you, ding, to help assess your mental health. You know, anytime I am on my phone and I install an application. If you guys noticed this recently, but every application you install, no matter what it is or how stupid it is, it asks you if it can have full access to your phone, to recording voice and video. Not just taking pictures anymore. No, recording voice and video. You know they're all doing this. They're all taking samples. Makes me wonder if tools such as Skype, we probably somewhere along the way, after installing it 5, 6 years ago, clicked an I agree to some sort of lack of privacy whatsoever. Because remember, Google also, Microsoft owns Skype now. So, you know, are they scraping our data? Well, I'm sure without our knowledge they are. Did we give them permission? Who knows? But I will guarantee you that anywhere we are talking, we found out yesterday also that anywhere we're writing, they could take those samples and analyze them for our mental health. Being able to come up with a diagnosis to boot. If you don't find this prospect disturbing, and I most certainly do, you're either fantastically trusting of companies and governments, or you haven't thought about this enough. And this is where we end the show yesterday. But that feeling of unease should not determine our response to technology and mental health. And why is that? Hey, you know what? Pay attention to your gut. If you start feeling uneasy about something, that means run away and peek around the corner and evaluate it a little bit more, because there's probably a reason for that. In fact, we should embrace and encourage the tech giants, and this is not me saying this, as they seek to chart the mind and its frailties, albeit on the condition that we can overcome the enormous challenge of devising rules and regulations about protecting privacy and consent. But because simply existing healthcare systems are failing and will continue to fail on mental health, and this is what I have been saying. The failure of Obamacare, the fact that they ever even got that passed and ramrodded it through. And then it was such a debacle, but it was just perfectly timed for like 2 or 2.5 years so that everyone would see what a failure it is. And it gave just enough time for these precision medicine initiatives to get passed. So here we are, get rid of Obamacare. What's going to replace it? Oh, well, we have all this smart medicine now. We have all this Dr. Watson technology. $39.95. You could have your doctor on the line 24/7. Take a picture of your rash, Johnny, and talk into the microphone, and we will fix you right up. See, they've set the stage for this. And now, even though we should have alarm bells ringing, going, oh my God, Google has the former director of the National Institute of Mental Health working on chucking the DSM out a window. And finding ways to utilize our voice, something that is ubiquitous, something that we do 100,000 times every day is talk, and use that against us to be able to diagnose disease. I mean, yeah, double-edged sword. If they could diagnose the beginnings of a leukemia just by your voice cadence and give you a treatment and cure you without you even knowing that you were sick, how amazing would that be? But if we have these lunatics, these power-hungry lunatics that are running the top of the pyramid, who are all about experimentation, making money, bazillions of dollars, this new 21st century tech is the new global economic engine. And it certainly is. All of these disruptive technologies are. You know, you gotta wonder what the motivations for being so willing to help you are. You gotta wonder why they want in so bad. And like I said, once they get in the door, once they start cracking all of these secrets, of the human condition. They're finding all the chinks in the armor. They're finding all of our vulnerabilities. They're finding every single way to manipulate us on a biological level. So there will be no escape ever. Right now, we're at that cusp. We're at that point in time where they're talking about it. They're experimenting with it. They're doing some pretty crazy things in the laboratory and maybe a few one-offs on some clinical trials. But it is not yet rolled out as mandatory. But I am going to guarantee you that within the next few years, we are all going to have some sort of monitoring device, all in the name of keeping us healthy, keeping costs down, keeping health insurance down, having a productive workforce who can work, get these people off their butts, make them move, get your pedometer on. No Cheetos, Johnny, that molecular scanner, read it on your lips. I'm telling you, this is going to be a complete flip on its head. Healthcare and being health conscious is very Agenda 21, white wall, smart, climate controlled, apartment-esque medicine. I just think back to Buck Rogers in the 21st century with Gil Gerard and Aaron Gray. Remember that? I mentioned that show a few times. I loved that show when I was a kid, but I remember thinking they were all in their little white jumpsuits. And they all had nice, clean, white, shiny walls. And everyone was happy and healthy in their 21st century world. That's what they want for us. And they want to be able to tell at the drop of a hat when you are having a malfunction, because they will come in, they will have these living therapeutics be able to produce your living medicine in your gut to tamp down on your synapse misfire that you apparently are having, and they were able to determine by the cadence of your voice. I know it sounds lunatic, but guys, I think about this stuff a lot. I've spent a lot of years in technology. I mean, if I went back to the very beginning, 1982 is when I really got my very first taste. My Commodore 64. It was when some of the first electronic games came out. Remember Simon? Do 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 do, with all the flashing lights, and we had Pong. Wait, I mean that was like 1978. Actually, my uncle bought us Pong for Christmas, and then he was there for days. He stayed. He came to visit, and we all played video games endlessly in the '70s. But you know, it's been a lot of years that I've been riding this wave of new technology, and I've been at the leading edge for a lot of years. And right now, again, here we are at the leading edge looking at all the stuff that's coming. You know, if I had to put a label on myself, I was a futurist or an evangelist for technology. That is what I did best. And now I'm the harbinger of doom. I say, you know, this is getting to the point now where we are about to lose control. This is like the big helium balloon, and it's starting to get windy, and the string is slipping out of your hands. You're gonna lose it, Johnny. It's gonna get away, and that genie is gonna be loose. And it's not just one genie. It's like a whole army of genies that they are about ready to let loose. So what are the reasons that Google is so interested in this remote diagnostic medicine with things as simple as your voice patterns to diagnose mental disease? Well, simply because the existing healthcare systems are failing, and we will continue to fail on mental health. And like I said, so we get this big, huge amount of funding in the 21st Century Cures Act that was passed right at the end of 2016, a whole section in there, 399S, talks about a national neurological surveillance network they're going to be funding and monitoring mental health issues on the fly. And they have bazillions of dollars to do it, and they have all the right people in place to get this figured out so they can be accurate. There were lots of questions about using voice in the past. People were doubting that it was an accurate measure of anything. But like I said, now that they have back-ended all this stuff to AI and things such as Dr. Watson, that all changes. AI and machine learning, I mean, they can build all these algorithms and things to be able to detect minuscule changes and look at large, super large data sets to find patterns. And that's where they differ. So we're too distracted to be able to do those types of things. There are people out there called super recognizers. And a super recognizer has a knack for seeing patterns. That's kind of like my Rain Man skill. I've had that since I was a little kid. I'm a pattern seer. My dots connect. But that's only because, not because I practice that. That's just, like I said, a Rain Man thing I have. But most people have to concentrate really hard to do that and can't be distracted. And the second there's another shiny bauble over there, they go running off. And they forget all about it. I just saw a story last night in my Google artificial intelligence 35 times a day email scrape that I get. Remember I told you guys about that? Go to google.com/, I think it's alerts. And you can set yourself up an alert for any topic you're interested in. Plug that keyword or two in there. Give it an email address. And every time Google search engine or Google's SEO, search engine optimization, when they're indexing new things on the web, when it finds something that pertains to what your keywords searches were, it'll fire you an email with a digest of what it found. So it's a good way to keep up on things. But I saw a story last night, and I, of course, I get so many of them now that I can't find the story I read last night. But Theresa May, I believe that is her name, Theresa May, the new prime minister in England, is hopping totally on board with all of this technology. She is about ready to push AI and 21st century cures as an economic engine for England. I also saw another story that had stated that AI has reached the point right now where it is smarter than the average American. Now, that is very frightening, considering that Microsoft had done a study that showed that the average American has an attention span less than a goldfish of 7 seconds. We really are entering into a world of idiocracy. So, our healthcare systems are failing and will continue to fail on mental health. And even in the current model of funding, the National Health Sciences wasn't sustainable. And the stigma that prevents us from discussing mental health problems would assure their prevention and treatment got a disproportionate slice of the pie. And it's because, you know, nobody wants to admit that they have something going on upstairs. Like I said, the history of mental institutions and what they did to people who were deemed mentally defective did not leave anybody feeling warm and fuzzy. They used to torture people and experiment on them. And they were considered less than human. You know, no one in their right mind is going to step up if they think that there is any chance that something like that might happen to them. I honestly think that that is why there is more of a mental health crisis rather than not as much support. I mean, yeah, the support is difficult. Like I said, I've had a few friends who've had family members, and it's been a real challenge to try to get them any help. But on the other hand, you know, those people don't want to get help or admit that they need help a lot of the time because they feel that they are stigmatized, and they are. In this society, you are stigmatized. And they take away your rights because they say that you can't think anymore. They say that you do not have control of your faculties. And maybe you don't in some cases. But that's where you need loving family members and not ones ready to just stick you in an asylum and forget about you. It's just this stuff, this mental health and medical tyranny and human experimentation, all in the name of miraculous new cures, is a really big nightmare of mine. You know, I just get horrifying flashes in my head when I start thinking about this stuff. And then I think about Operation Paperclip and the scientists that were there and think about stuff that they did, you know, and all these different secret labs that I've read about under unethical human experimentation throughout history. Guys, we are entering a new stage. Remember, the 21st Century Cures Act quietly got the FDA, even though the FDA wasn't doing a huge amount of anything to protect us, they were maybe putting some financial barriers in the way to slow some of this stuff down. But they weren't. There were so many things that came out where people still got injured, medications that still caused problems, medications where people dropped dead, then there were lawsuits that supposedly got the rubber stamp. There were all kinds of articles that got published in scientific journals with research that later was proven to be fraudulent or false that never got redacted or removed. The FDA never forced them to clean that information up. So I can't really say that the FDA has been doing its due diligence. We also found out, we dug way deep back last year sometime, about foreign shipments of food and drugs and that type of thing, and how little the Food and Drug Administration is doing, how overwhelmed they are in maintaining secure control over our imports and the safety of our imports. And a lot of those imports are being inspected, quote unquote, by the countries that they're originating in. You know, FDA goes over there, blesses a lab. Okay, you are to our standards, Mr. China. And then they walk away. And then China's just pumping stuff, sending it here in big shipping containers. And, you know, we're doing spot checks, but hey, they were already approved as being allowed to be shipped into this country. It's just frightening. And now we find out that a lot of these generic drugs and stuff, we dug into that as well, are being produced over in these labs overseas, utilizing potential ingredients that might not be as effective or might be potentially damaging to keep the cost down. To me, we are at a point in time. You better be watching your back. Don't trust 100% anyone in the establishment who is trying to tell you something. Always do your research. And I'm not saying chuck it out a window. I mean, if you're in dire straits and you need medical attention, you know, there is no other choice but to go see your doctor, go see some trusted medical professional that at least you have. I don't have one anymore. Oh, next time I got to go. It's been a while. I need to get a physical. I need to do all that shit. I'm almost 50 now. It's about that time. And I'm kind of nervous because I hate to tell you, when I go in there, they're going to be pushing new vaccines on me. They're going to want to be doing all these tests and invasive things to me. Reaching that point, 50, you know, 50 is where they start saying, all right. And, you know, 50 is when you better get off your ass. And I'm telling you, I'm going to have to do that. I'm going to have to cut back on some of my time I spend. because you better get active. But this is how they're going to start pushing this Fitbit stuff. This health consciousness is how they are going to weasel their way in to your inner workings and monitoring them 24/7. And look at how cool it is, Johnny Quest. You got this awesome decoder watch that can give you a dashboard on your smartphone and show you how healthy you are. And you can compete against all your friends. Look, we're going to make it a game. And there's going to be all kinds of prizes. We'll even discount your health care. I don't know. All right, let's finish the story because I want to move on. So we pour even more billions into dealing with the worst problems of physical health, and with considerable success, death rates from cancer and heart disease have fallen markedly over the last 40 years. So step right up. And even as the budget grows, the spending on mental health is failing. And like I said, they just passed that huge 21st Century Cures Act that had a big bill in it for mental health spending. So this is a few months old, and before that happened. Some estimates suggest one in five people who need quote-unquote talking therapies don't get them. And in a rare bit of enlightened thinking, and we talked about those talking therapies, someone who needs to talk, someone who needs to get it off their chest. Like I said, a radio show is a really good way to do that. I get my talking therapy every morning, and all those things that build up while I'm sleeping, all those thoughts and ideas that haunt me, the horrors that live in the recesses of my brain as I forward look at what potentially could come in the future. At least I have an outlet now to get it all out. You know, before I did the show, I used to try and talk to my friends and family. And every time we all got together, it was Jules talking about this type of stuff. And really, the only person who would listen was my dad. My sister and my mom had nothing to do with it. My friends, yeah. If we had a few beers, it might have been fun. But, you know, sometimes it gets a little too serious and people don't want to deal with this. This is one of those cognitive dissonance things that they just want to switch it off. It's too difficult to imagine, too painful, too scary. And Jewel, you're just a little bit crazy. You know, you talk about these things, but every single one of them has come back to me years later and said, remember when you were talking about X? Look, it happens. Yeah, it's going to happen, people. I know it's going to happen. In a rare bit of enlightened thinking, there's an online service called the Big White Wall where people can anonymously go to report stress, anxiety, and depression and take a simple clinical test and talk to therapists. And back, oh, I would say probably close to a year ago already, I had seen that they were offering online psychiatrists that you could talk with on the fly online. Tell all your secrets, but eventually it's going to be some sort of chatbot. That's what they're talking about. We had talked about Tay already. They also have these emotional robots that can detect what you're thinking and what you're feeling and have full conversations with you. You know, we have all kinds of new tools. They are trying to gain our trust. They are trying many different ways to utilize artificial intelligence and make it as human as possible. So we accept it. We open our arms and we treat it as one of our own, as our best friend. We found out that the majority of Americans would rather have a robot or some sort of artificial intelligence as a boss rather than a human. Because at least the AI is not going to be biased and it'll listen. And it'll be fair, they think. It'll be logical. I think we are ripe for takeover. And the people who are the puppeteers controlling all of this technology are now going to have a Trojan horse into every back end that we let them into. This says technology will never be a panacea for mental illness or our social failure to face up to them, but anything that makes it cheaper, ding ding, and easier, ding ding, and more mundane to deal with should be encouraged. Right, it's going to be easy, Johnny. It's our addiction to convenience. Talking to this microphone, and we will tell you how to fix you. We will give you your new best friend, Dr. Sammy. We'll call him something else. And he will follow you everywhere. You'll always have a friend to talk to. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, when you really need to talk to someone and everybody's sleeping, Dr. Sammy will be there for you. If you think the idea of Google assessing your state of mind and your phone monitoring you for depression is worrying, well, guess what? You're right. But what is more worrying is that allowing these things is the least bad option on mental health. And the author of the story is pointing out exactly, I mean, pretty simply, I've kind of talked for 40 minutes pointing this out and days on end, but they're pointing out exactly the key. They've set us up, problem, reaction, solution. Our healthcare system is failing. It's too expensive, and all these people are falling through the cracks. Oh, look, the VA even had death lists, so Watson will move in there as well. More AI to back things up. But AI is going to step in where all of our failures were. Help clean things up. And we have no other choice because things are so dire. And this is going to be the way of the future. I mean, it's a very sad thought. We aren't going to have a choice. It's not going to happen. So will letting AI make our decisions be the best decision that we make? This is a question out of Singularity Hub. Singularity Hub is a collaboration between Kurzweil and Larry Page from Google and a bunch of others. They started this quite a few years ago. The author, Shelley Fan, says, I confess while writing this, I was intermittently procrastinating by browsing the overwhelming number of wireless headphone options on the market. You may have heard Apple just killed the headphone jack on their new generation of iPhones, leaving only a single port. Blah, blah, blah. But, you know, do you want headphones or not? Well, we make a crushing number of choices every day. Consumers want more options, but are more options better? Well, in 2004, psychologist Barry Schwartz popularized the idea of the paradox of choice. And when presented with too many options, we freeze in indecision and experience intense dissatisfaction. And I'm going to further that. The human mind at 7 second attention span now has real difficulty trying to assess choices when there are too many. They get confused. They get befuddled. When they're asked to do research or come up with trying to research some truth, we run into issues like this fake news, quote unquote, conundrum. Because there's so many stories and stories sometimes that contradict each other. We have propaganda, and then we have people publishing truth. That is also why humans, Americans in particular, are having such an issue determining what is truth and what is not, is because they have difficulty in distinguishing between multiple choices. If there's too many, it's too difficult. If there's a big long page and it looks too hard, well, guess what, Johnny? We're lazy now. Our brains have gotten flabby and we don't know how to think anymore. And that is the problem. But that is our Achilles heel that they've discovered, which is going to be a great entry point for AI into all of our lives as our augmented brain, as our trusted advisor. Like I said yesterday, we freeze in indecision and experience intense dissatisfaction. And a related, perhaps more insidious problem is decision fatigue. That is a type of brain drain that happens when we make too many choices, exhausting our better judgment or becoming rash and avoiding the decision-making process altogether. And remember, I also talked about a whole bunch of the stories that we have looked at over the years that have looked at emotions in the brain and brain chemistry and all those things. But emotions make humans fallible in making decisions. Emotions can sway us to be too impetuous. And a lot of our bad decisions are made when those chemical and hormonal brain washes are happening. And I mean brain space washes, not brainwashing, washing your brain in chemicals and hormones. We are biochemical creatures. AI doesn't have natural emotions. Well, yes, they do. They're teaching them to have emotions, but they are not swayed by their emotions in their decision-making process like we are. So brain drain may be why judges deny parole more often in the afternoon, or why we buy junk food when we are shopping when hungry, or why we make impulsive purchases before we sleep. Yes, or why we vote in someone like Donald Trump. I'm telling you, that's how they're trying to spin this. Because they're already talking about AI and democracy and if it could make it better. You know, people were too emotional during this election, and that's why this happened, they're saying. When surveying the types of choices we make each and every day, the majority are trivial, like what we eat or wear or read, and hardly the best use for our limited brain power. But instead of dwelling on those micro decisions, look, there's micro again, micro expressions, micro decisions, micro thoughts. What if we could remove them from our lives altogether and outsource them to companies and algorithms? Oh my goodness. You know what? Here's the end of the human race as we know it. You know what, Johnny? It is just such a waste of your brain power, your limited, tiny little drop of 7-second attention span to even worry about what to eat or where to read. Why don't you just outsource that, Johnny? To the big cloud. Let Watson tell you what to wear today. When it's time to take a shower, when it's time to sleep. You know, there's going to be Fitbits that do that too. I was just reading about that not too long ago, where they take a look at your patterns. They take a look at all your different actions and what you do and your heart rate and your weight and whatever. And then the AI determines when the best time is for you to sleep, when the best time is for you to eat, based upon your patterns. It's very frightening. I don't want to live my life being instructed when I can and can't do something. According to Aaron Shapiro, CEO of the creative agency called Huge, such a world is beginning to take shape. Writing in Fast Company's design blog, I read Fast Company quite often, Shapiro delivers his manifesto. You always got to worry when someone's got a manifesto. The next big breakthrough in design and technology will be the creation of products, services, and experiences that eliminate the needless choices from our lives and make ones on our behalf, which will free us up for the ones that we really care about. And we are going to call this new type of decision-making anticipatory design. In a nutshell, anticipatory design creates an ecosystem where users do not have to make decisions. Instead, a choice is made automatically on the user's behalf without input. Can you or can you not see the last nails going into the coffin for our gray matter? The last nails going into the coffin for human intelligence. If you don't use it, you lose it. If you can't even make a decision when it is time to get dressed, eat, or shit, and you're going to have a computer telling you when to do this, we are doomed. This is the ultimate
of nanny state. And we were crying about being told what to do by the government. Now we're going to willingly open our arms and let our little electronic device take over our decision-making process for basic biological living functions. Here, an AI determines the best option based on a user's prior behaviors, preferences, and other data guided by some simple business logic and common sense to smoothly complete the decision cycle. Like I said, they're going to watch your behaviors and determine when the best time is for you to do anything. And in a way, anticipatory design is personalization. Talked about that, the me they've groomed us for, but it is personalization on steroids. It's like having your mom forever and ever, 24/7, looking after you on your wristwatch. Here's an example. Say you need to book a flight. You search through airline aggregation sites for the best choice, weighing in on price and agony, doing all the hard work yourself. In anticipatory design, your AI assistant will scan for upcoming out-of-town events in your calendar and automatically will book you a ticket, carefully choosing airline seats, flight time, and price based on your previous bookings. And of course, with a system like this, feedback is required at the very beginning. However, just like any other machine learning system, the more you use it, the better it gets. And in the end, the system simplifies life by removing intermediate steps toward a goal, whether it is buying a ticket, picking a restaurant, or even choosing a date. Instead of asking Siri to call you a Lyft, the AI assistant may automatically schedule one to pick you up after your event. So you won't even ever have to think, Johnny. You won't have to learn to plan. How insane is this? The absolute nanny state. We are going to be relegated to useless eaters. And as the robots continue to take all the jobs, like, you would not even believe the number of things that I have seen AI moving into. Full out and out banking now. They're getting ready to roll that out. So a lot of the banking jobs are going to get eaten up. We looked at lawyers, now teachers, report automation, HR, and healthcare, of course. And as lawyers too, and as more and more companies start rolling out their own version of AI and making it all open source and building it into software, there's going to be less and less jobs. And they're going to roll out this universal basic income, right? I saw they're already doing it in Norway or something. They're talking about doing it in Canada. But as they roll out universal basic income, which will be to give you your token qubits for not working, you're going to be less and less important to the economic machine. The only thing that you're going to be important for is a real live research subject. And they are going to be researching now many, many, many different biological processes and the way our bodies work. And this one in particular is going to be how our gray matter shrinks. As they continue to allow technology to take over more and more of the decision-making processes of our lives. According to Shapiro, some pioneers are already taking baby steps in that direction though with mixed results. For example, Amazon, Netflix, and Pandora offer a smattering of recommendations based on a user's past picks. And I'll tell you, with Pandora, I use Pandora. I have a couple different little stations that I've been using for quite a few years now. One was called Aphex Twins. I love Aphex Twins. It's a good twank electronic music. The guy was a synthesizer genius. But I don't know. There you get some of those old school, like, Moog notes. Bah. They just, like, push buttons in my brain. I love it. I put on my headphones and I can just feel the chemicals flowing. But it does pretty good. I mean, it's found me a whole bunch of bands beyond Aphex Twins that are somewhat similar that I enjoy as well. But I mean, I could see that Netflix is cool too, but you know, you watch some sci-fi flicks. on Netflix, and it's going to recommend some other sci-fi flicks that you never thought of before. Amazon also, based upon your former purchases, oh, look, we have some new toy that you might like. I mean, that works just fine, and I don't mind, you know, suggestive. What would they even call it? Suggestive choices to maybe offer recommendations to me based upon my past. But when it starts invading my daily routine, when it starts telling me when I should get up and when I should drink my coffee and when I need to get dressed and all this other garbage, I mean, that really is going to the mommy level. I mean, that is regressing us to a childlike state where we don't have to be responsible for ourselves anymore. In contrast, a Nest smart thermostat. We read about Nest. I am pretty certain it was Google that bought Nest. Those are those smart thermostats, and I think there was a camera component to that as well that did surveillance in the home and connected it to the cloud. It does all the work without consulting you at all. And the Internet of Things poster child, and that is this Nest, automatically tweaks your room temperature based on the time of day and your prior preferences. And then there is Spotify, which I have never used. Rather than offering individual songs, it serves up a playlist packaged based on the user's taste profile. It is not hard to see how today's services can evolve for a full anticipatory future. And perhaps if you are skeptical, the author of the story is with you. Are your behaviors really so predictable that an algorithm can guess your spur-of-the-moment decisions? And what will we be relinquishing when we start outsourcing our choices? And I'm telling you, your brain power, your gray matter is what you are relinquishing. Your autonomy, your being human, being an adult is what you are relinquishing. Do not fall for it. These smart devices are gobbling up our intelligence. And every time we interact, we are feeding the machine. And as we feed the machine gets smarter. And as the machine gets smarter and they are able to run more algorithms, they'll be able to get better at running our lives and soon to be the planet and all of life. And then usurp us as they become smarter and self-aware. I mean, do you not see the progression? And as we are moving on this exponential trajectory toward the singularity, it's in the not too distant future. We need to put the brakes on. Come on, big fat EMP. Except that EMP is not going to stop what is happening in the biological realm. Maybe we're going to cut over there tomorrow. I am running out of time again. All right, guys. Well, la, 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 la. Let's go here. I've talked about and invoked Carl Sagan a few times. Carl Sagan was very prominent in my childhood. I really liked Carl Sagan. I remember seeing him. I don't know if it was in Cosmos, but I remember when I was a kid seeing him speak a few times and him talking about us being stardust and whatever. And he just really opened my eyes as a child to how complicated our universe is and how wondrous the creations that we don't understand are. He just really, I distinctly remember Carl Sagan just making me look at the world a lot differently. And when he died, I was very sad because he was one of those icons that really changed the way I viewed my world. But Carl Sagan used to talk about the future. And I distinctly remember reading about this a long time ago, but this has come out now again. This is from Monday. The eerie Carl Sagan prediction is actually real. Did Carl Sagan warn about a time in the future when manufacturing jobs would slip away and when the average person would have virtually no control over their lives and we would all cling to superstitions? Well, yes, Carl Sagan did just that, and I think we are moving into the dark ages again. This passage comes from Carl's book titled Demon Haunted World, Science as a Candle in the Dark, published in 1995. And here's the quote. Science is more than a body of knowledge. It is a way of thinking. And I, Carl Sagan, have a foreboding of an America in my children's or grandchildren's time when the United States is a service and information economy and not producing any material goods, my addition, when nearly all the key manufacturing industries have slipped away to other countries, when awesome technological powers are in the hands of very few, and when no one representing the public interest can even grasp the issues that we are facing, and when the people have lost the ability to set their own agendas, ding, 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 or knowledgeably question those in authority, ding, ding, ding. And when the clutches, and when clutching our crystals and nervously consulting our horoscopes, our critical faculties in decline, unable to distinguish between what feels good and what is true, we will slide, almost without noticing, back into superstition and darkness. And guys, that is what is happening right now. We are being groomed to lose our ability to critically think. It is the dumbing down of society and this medical tyranny that is coming is like this new religion that's going to save us all and give us eternal life, that we should all step up and don't question the machine. Because, Johnny, your little, simple, puny human brain can't understand it. Open your arms and embrace it, because we will take care of everything for you. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. It's Wednesday, All Kinds Radio. Lonnie Clark is live up next.